Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. This week, we are going to be investigating the Internet of Packaging. There's something that unites the online experience and the brick and mortar experience. There's billions of them, and it's the humble cardboard box. One of the biggest players in this market is WestRock, and we're going to be talking to the VP of Connected Solutions, John Dwyer. He's a great guy. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation.
The Mr. Beacon Ambient IoT podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, bringing intelligence to every single thing.
Well, John, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking time out.
Glad to be here. This is a terrific opportunity, Steve, and I love the podcast and love the things that you're doing.
Very good. Well, I am excited about you being on the podcast because, I mean, this is all about the convergence of the digital and physical worlds, breaking down the barriers and building links between the world of AI and ChatGPT and the awesome power of the cloud and the physical things in our world. And your company, WestRock, makes an awful lot of physical things. And I became aware of your company. Probably a lot of people don't know it, so we'll give you a chance to introduce it in a second. But I started going to these conferences and a lot of pioneering work around in-store experiences was being done by this company that makes cardboard boxes. So you have the catbird seat, an amazing vantage point of these boxes, which are made in their millions and billions, and all of a fascinating cocktail of digital to physical technologies. And, you know, we haven't spoken at any length before, but I know that your firm have been experimenting with and implementing solutions with QR codes, barcodes, digital watermarks, NFC, RFID, and of course, our paths crossed with the partnership with WestRock and Wiliot. So you're also in the world of Bluetooth. So I'd love you to explain a bit about WestRock, its scale and the business, and then we'll go on and ask you a bit about your business, which is essentially the digital solutions piece, which is all about these tendons joining the muscle of the cloud with the bones of the physical world. But who is WestRock for the people who may not have heard of you before?
Sure. So WestRock is one of the largest packaging companies in the world. We were created in 2015, a merger between Mead Westvaco Corporation, which has had some consumer business, kind of a broad consumer focusing paper business, and then Rock 10 Corporation, which is a very traditional corrugated company. So Mead Westvaco and Rock 10 became WestRock. And merged those things. We divested of some assets that were plastic related. And so one of the first things that you'll notice about WestRock is that we are all about sustainability and fiber replacing plastic. Corrugated boxes, paper containers, the dividers that are in a case of wine. We have a global paper division that doesn't make, the coffee cups at your favorite coffee shop, but we make the paper that the cups are made out of. So we supply those manufacturers of that product. So we're broadly divided into three major businesses, which are corrugated container, consumer packaging, and global paper. We have a distribution business. We also have an automation business, which plays into the internet of packaging and physical to digital world that we discuss. And we kind of sit in the middle of all that as an enterprise player. Oh, and I can't forget recycling. So I always think of recycling as our superpower. We are mm-hmm. the only large integrated packaging manufacturer in North America that actually recycles product as well. So we have a significant amount of materials that we recover from manufacturers and distribution centers and retailers. And then that drives our mills, which create more recycled content. So it's really a critical part of our business. As part of our corrugated business, you mentioned we do a lot of work in merchandising materials. So we have one of the largest merchandising companies in North America. And we started experimenting in digital in that space. We thought it was really interesting to put a display for a consumer product goods company on the floor in a retailer and start to measure things like what's the foot traffic? How does this location perform versus another location? We actually started testing Bluetooth sensors in these locations about 5 years ago.
Mm.
And so we were using those to identify when was the display set up. So if if it's a seasonal display and it's for the holidays and it's to set on a Friday or Saturday, we were actually able to start reporting and saying, oh, look, that didn't set until the following week. Well, you miss a lot of sales. And so you can start to solution around that. How do we make sure that we get better compliance? So that was the thing we were measuring with. And that became just a really interesting test bed for us to digitize physical things, enable them to be more visible, more compliant, more part of a digital supply chain. And that was really the very first elements, I would say, of our digital journey at Westrock.
So these are merchandising displays, and you had a Bluetooth beacon that you built into it. Is that right?
We did, yeah, for sure. And so there were we actually invested in a company back in the day that had some bridges that you would that could be installed into the ceiling, mm-hmm. and it created essentially a mesh network within the store. And whenever it would see the unique identifier on that, we would know that that was laundry detergent versus cookies or crackers or whatever the content of that display was, and validate that it was compliant from a timing perspective and in the right location. And then also, how long was the display up? If the idea was that it was set for a month and it was gone after 2 weeks, why was that? So we're starting to accumulate data about what should happen versus what really happened. And what was the impact on sales, the overall, brand exposure, all the reasons why you do merchandising in store, we now had a better insight into what was really happening.
That's a great application. And I often think about the marketing people that work incredibly hard to create the artwork and the campaigns around these things, and then it doesn't work, and you can imagine all the finger pointing that goes on. Oh, it was the wrong color, or the call to action was wrong, but maybe it just was never deployed. And it was never
bring up a great point. We've actually tested two displays side by side. Different colors, different graphics, and then use the sensors to identify which one ran out of product for fastest. How did it resonate with the consumer? Were we getting more foot traffic or not in a certain location? So there really were amazing things. And now we've taken that to the next level with digital displays, which have LED screens that can generate a message. It can be distance related. So at 15 feet, you get a generic message. As you get to within 5 feet, you get a different message. And within 2 feet, maybe you get a coupon that as you start to drive people closer to the product, then you start to incent them to take action and do something that that you like them to do.
And so this is essentially the work of your group, your VP of Digital Solutions. Is that, can you describe a bit about what your mandate is and what the boundaries are of what you do within WestRock? And just before we do that, I just want to give people a sense of the scale, like how many employees work at WestRock and how many items do you actually produce? Because the numbers are big.
Yeah, the numbers are big. Somewhere between 70 and 80 billion things a year are manufactured by WestRock, or the materials that we manufacture are used to make things. Mm-hmm. And we have 50,000 employees plus. Globally, we have 300 locations all over the world. We have a large footprint in North America, but also big in Mexico, Brazil, India for manufacturing, and all throughout the EU, as well as China. So a pretty broad footprint from a manufacturing perspective. And we don't own forests, but we help manage forest land. We plant two trees for every tree that we utilize. People get funny about trees, and we think of it a little differently as a crop. So just as you raise corn or wheat and you harvest that and replant it next year, we do the same thing with trees. The time frame is much longer, though. So we're actually working with landowners and stewards of forests to help manage those forests to maintain health, but to grow the capacity for materials. It's important to have... as you make fiber-based product, to have what we call virgin product, which comes from trees. But it's all the more important to recycle and bring that fiber back. One of the things I love about corrugated packaging, about 92% of it gets recycled, which is amazing. I mean, when you take a step back, in the world that we live in today, what do 92% of people do regularly? It's probably not voting, or wearing a seatbelt, or not texting while driving. And yet we've created this this incredible environment where people understand that you can take a corrugated box and put it in your recycling bin, and it most likely gets made into something else. One of the things I just love about this circular economy concept.
And how what is reuse like? Because it seems like you have a tremendous advantage in terms of recycling. You can get cynical when you see the recycling marks because, you know, sometimes the recyclers don't exist. They don't know what to do with it. But it seems like you guys have got the cardboard recycling. We can have confidence that that actually does happen, which is really cool. But obviously, the only thing better than recycling is reusing. And that's where I think some people who are environmentally focused have a question, you know, the age-old question we get asked every day, paper or plastic? And paper always feels better, so I tend to go for the paper. I guess there's two questions. You know, what are your views about the pros and cons in terms of sustainability of those two materials? And also, to what extent do you see cardboard boxes being reused, which is, you know, obviously requires less energy than recycling?
Sure. Yeah, so cardboard boxes do get reused. Depending upon the application, we see in the produce space, cardboard boxes being reused. And you can manufacture boxes in a way with, double-walled corrugate or different coatings on them that make them more durable. Think of a route driver delivering snacks to a store. They're filling orders at a distribution center. These are lightweight products typically, so they're going to use those over and over again. Big retailers at the distribution center level use corrugated containers that they move back and forth. Because it's heavily recycled, there's value associated with it. So what's the comparative? Look, we replace as often as we can plastic with paper. I think the challenge with the plastics industry Actually, recycling rates are going down in plastic because there are so many flavors of plastic that are out there, which is what makes it difficult. If you were to say, hey, everything needs to be made of PET, and we're going to make recycled PET, and we can use that over and over again, then I think you have a real story that you can start to tell around that. But unfortunately, over the last 5 years, and I'll recite what I read. I think this came from NPR. We've gone from about 9% of plastic being recycled to about 5%. Mm-hmm. And again, it's because of the diversity and disparity of plastics that are out there. The beauty of fiber is it's one thing. And so the ability to take wood-based fiber and recover it makes it much easier. I do like reuse. The challenge around reuse is that it requires cleaning, particularly when you're talking about food and produce and things like that. Now there's a lot of buzz around microplastics, everywhere. It's an important industry. There's a real place for plastics in our industry in terms of, what we think is cleaner and more sustainable. Certainly, I think fiber, wins in that analysis. But there is a place for plastics. Performance plastics do things that fiber can't. And I think we need to just balance what's the right amount of fiber versus the right amount of plastic, and how do we manage those recycling streams to have the least impact that we can on people and planet.
Amen. One of the things I have really enjoyed about getting to know WestRock a little bit is it's a great example of we take products for granted, and you open up the lid and you realize there's just so much more to this simple thing of a cardboard box than anyone ever thought of. And one of the things I love is the machinery that you guys use to construct a cardboard box. It's for anyone that enjoys any kind of technology or mechanical things or gets a delight in engineering, seeing one of those machines work and then seeing it add a digital ID, whether it's an RFID or one of our ambient IoT pixels. I mean, it's about, there isn't someone kind of putting the label on. It's all happening tremendously quickly with these amazing machines. What is your involvement? Presume, do you make the machines or you buy the machines or you help design them? What's the role of WestRock and those incredible machines?
So we make our own machinery, and again, we're the only large integrated corrugator that makes packaging machinery. And there's a real reason behind that, right? When you think about the complexity of receiving materials, forming cartons or cases, and the having one point of contact, having somebody responsible, it's very easy in machinery applications. And you see this in machinery and software. If those two things don't play nice together, the software manufacturer points at the machinery person and vice versa, right? And so we wanted WestRock to have sole ownership of the marriage between form and functionality, right? So taking this corrugated container, and there's some trends that are occurring right now that I think are important when we talk about machinery. One is that if you looked at an e-commerce box that arrives on your porch today versus what it was 3 or 4 years ago, it would be very common to get a very large box with a very small item in it. And that was because e-commerce companies want to have as few SKUs of product to manage as possible. And that means that sometimes you get an odd-shaped product that doesn't fit in a small box and has to go in a bigger box. So that's a problem, right? It's more the carbon footprint of that type of packaging is horrible. And so what you're seeing today is more packaging that is fit to purpose, fit to size. And that happens on machines, right? So we actually make machines now that can look at a package or a product as oddly shaped as a basketball and create a box that fits that basketball. So the machine cuts, forms, shapes, you know, puts all these things together. And the benefit long-term, lower shipping costs, lower, you know, less packaging material that goes inside of it. So when we talk about paper versus plastic, you see the plastic bubbles that go inside of packaging, you know, anything that's expensive. And if we can do something to reduce the amount of material used, you know, we think that's a benefit. Well, as we start to think about what is this? This is mass customization now.
Yes.
So then we start to think about what are other things that we can customize about that product that make it unique? Well, of course, the ability to put a Wiliot Pixel into the package. And by the way, putting something inside a corrugate box is hard to do when the box is already formed. So our ability to add the sensors while the box is being formed, make sure that we can put it in an optimized location, that the sensor is oriented in the way that, you know, gives it the best ability to be read. And we think, you know, if you really care about the temperature or light exposure or, you know, humidity, that all happens inside the box, not outside the box. So we really started thinking about, and honestly, the Wiliot model really drove us in this direction to say, if customers care about product, then getting sensors closest, whether it be beef or salmon or other types of protein, you know, whether it's, you know, electronics that might be impacted by humidity. We have a customer now that has very heavy liquid product that they store in a warehouse in Houston, Texas. And if they don't rotate their goods, the humidity causes the corrugate to collapse. So, you know, starting to understand what are the problems, and we always say in our group, you know, fall in love with the problem, not the solution. So we're very focused on what is it that our customers are challenged with, and then what's the toolkit that we've assembled with our great partners that can help us solve around that. So automation, mass customization, and then, you know, two things that we, you know, we really focus on. One is, we call this process Born Digital. So creating a package with a unique identity, and at the same time creating a digital twin. Again, you know this better than I. If a product has a sensor in it, there still are recalls. And I just heard this from one of our partners yesterday. The number one cause of recall is mismatch between the product itself and the sensor, what we think the sensor is attached to. So creating that kind of indelible link between product and sensor is incredibly important. And the complexity of that expands, you know, multiple fold. So you think, I can make these packages and ship them to a customer. Or that customer might have six manufacturing lines. Now they have to invest in CapEx. They need three or four people to manage those machines. And guess what? All of those pixels look the same. How do I know that I got the right pixel on orange juice versus tea or burgers versus chicken nuggets? You know, all of these things, this old, you know, metaphor is used over and over again because it's true. Garbage in, garbage out. So we know that creating a digital twin of a product that functions accurately and efficiently throughout the supply chain all starts with the linkage, you know, and the 100% verification that those two things are linked together. And that ties into automation and vision systems and, you know, all the different things that, you know, we really have some expertise around. That's been one of the most exciting parts of this journey, Steve, is not that you can digitize a package and create a digital twin, you know, from something in the physical world, but how do you scale it, right? I could spend an entire career running pilots and POCs and, you know, proving that there's value associated here, but scaling it, that's a thing. I mean, that is really a challenge in a world where there's 4 trillion or so consumer goods in the world that we, you know, we aspire to give these digital identities to. And so that's really the area that we focus on and where automation is kind of at the core.
Yeah, it's amazing work. It's a inspiring challenge. RFID industry at the moment, I would guess somewhere between 30 to 40 billion units, which is a lot, but the addressable market, and you know, you guys, I've seen images of Walmart boxes, and you work with some of the biggest online and brick and mortar retailers in the world. So you are right at the point. No one understands scale better than you guys in terms of packaging. But I, the thing that excites me is this ability to really take this good idea and put it in the hands of everybody. I think in many ways, we technologists are frustrated rock stars. We want people to hear our music. You know, we want right. a hit. We don't just want to, I mean, we do want to make interest, you know, the interesting creation, the beautiful creation, there's a satisfaction in that. But having people use what you make and design every day is where it's at. And you have the ability to do that. And, you know, one of the things that I appreciated, I hadn't really thought about, is this idea of taking something, and I don't want to make this all about William. A lot of this applies to all sorts of auto ID technology, but you,
for sure.
you take this thing that seems very small. It's the size of a postage stamp. How can we make it even cheaper? Well, what if we strip away 50% of the packaging of the tag and actually start embedding the chip and the antenna in the corrugate, and then we do away with all of the paper and adhesives and light blocking material and all that other stuff. And that's really how we get this down from, you know, not just less than 10 cents, but very small numbers of pennies. And once you do that, then your ability to make a difference increases exponentially. You can start to bring online so many things, food and all the products that get delivered, and you can have a more efficient supply chain, which has less waste in it, less loss, less theft, and it's all goodness in terms of channeling resources in a productive area. I do want you to talk about the 8-sided cardboard box, if you know what I mean. So, I guess there's more sides to that, but it basically we're used to these rectangular boxes, and they have a front and a back and a left side and a right side. But you came up with the idea of having some extra sides. Tell us about that.
Well, it kind of ties into what you just described about additional efficiency. So the more corners you add to something, the stronger it becomes. Particularly in terms of weight that it can carry. So the 8-sided container actually allows us to remove fiber from a product. So, you know, just as you talked about removing costs of materials, we can actually make things more sustainable by removing fiber. Adding more corners allows you to do that. And for things like rounds in particular, jugs of oil or cleaning solutions or hamburger patties, you know, another thing that where the corner is actually wasted space in many cases. So we call it a mitered corner. The other thing that we found out early on is that if we put a sensor in a mitered corner, it actually makes it about 30% more discoverable. You know this, you need air gap, particularly if products are dense. So the enemy, we always say of sensors is moisture content and metal. And so creating that air gap, and if you think of an 8-sided container, those edges never touch. So there's no shadowing. It becomes a very efficient way to make the package more functional. You can reduce fiber, potentially offset some of the costs of the sensors. But I will say, you know, this is one of the challenges in our business, is that the sensor is viewed as a cost. And it's part of a package that, every one of our customers has very savvy buyers that are trained to create a bunch of apples to apples comparisons to things. And so, you know, we're very focused that a smart package is significantly different from a standard package. And by moving upstream, you gain efficiencies, but oftentimes the value is generated downstream. At a 3PL or a distribution center or at a retailer, where you disaggregate and reaggregate product, and you need to be able to understand what those aggregations look like. So the easy to say, hard to do. You know, we try to focus more on value than cost, but we're continually looking at ROI calculations around smart packaging, because I think you can get caught up and say, this box costs a dollar, and now this smart box costs a dollar and 10 cents. And so that's 10 cents more than what I spent before. But the reality is, it can help you reduce your waste by 30%. It might reduce the time that it takes to look for goods in a warehouse by hundreds of man hours over the course of a year. You can load a truck faster. You could have less on-time and full penalties because you're fulfilling orders more accurately. So while we love to think about how do we make things more efficient, I also caution everybody we work with to say, look, cost is a thing. And, you know, as we want to scale, we have to think about what that overall cost is. But there's a total cost of ownership that, takes into consideration all this value. Oh, and by the way, what if I can help you reduce your EPR obligations by validating at the recycling center that 90% of your product is getting recycling, so, or recycled, so that the packaging tax becomes less onerous. So we're working on the physical to digital, but also what is the value of visible packaging in the supply chain that kind of speaks for itself. The other thing I would really say is important is interoperability. This is a little funny thing I always say, but IoT, which most people are familiar with, is home automation. And the reason it doesn't work very well is because Siri and Alexa are not BFFs. They don't speak to each other. And so you've got all of these linear IoT solutions. Look, I have a smart doorbell and an oven and a TV and, you know, all these, and none of them talk to each other. You know, very, very difficult to get coordination. In the world of Internet of Packaging, interoperability is the absolute key. It's what I love about what you all are doing with the Wiliot Pixel and the open platform. You know, making sure that it's as accessible, the technology is accessible. And so standards are important, interoperability is important, and we want to make things visible, not just to us, but to any place they are in an import facility, in a ship, on a plane. That's where the power of this becomes really self-evident.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with all of the things that you just said. Any thoughts on how do we get the buyers over the... Because the buyer is going to fail, isn't he? We're asking the buyer to say, oh, that dollar package is now $1.10. They look really bad. And yet, the potential of having visibility up and down the supply chain of that container, we could halve the carbon footprint, which means halving the cost. It means less capital employed.
That's right.
In goods, it means potentially dynamic routing, pre-kitting of deliveries with smaller trucks driving short. I mean, you could be saving a mass of money up and down the supply chain. How do you get the buyer out of this bind where he just looks like he failed, but the result is potentially a win for his company's profits and the environment? And how do you get over that? I'm still trying to figure it out myself.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. So the buyers are doing their jobs. We're starting to tell, basically to your point, we're telling her that the sun rises in the west now and sets in the east, right? It just, everything that he or she's been trained to know is different. So I think it requires a level of sophistication. It's going to be driven from the top down. And it's incumbent upon us to lean in. Look, we're running pilots and POCs for our customers where we're absorbing the cost to learn what we need to learn, to really understand, are the assumptions that we're making true, and are the problems that we thought we were solving the actual problems that exist in the real world? So I think what's incumbent upon us are to create these case studies, to have open collaboration, to share the results, and to your point, walk things all the way through the supply chain, because there's value in product being recycled. There's value in product being reused. There's value in understanding, are we mitigating recalls? The average cost of a recall, I think the last time I saw, is $30 million. We need to just start thinking holistically. It requires kind of bold leadership. We talked about this earlier. You have to fight for what is right. And I think in almost every area where you add serialization and you uniquely identify a thing, value comes out of that process that is both anticipated and unanticipated. Mm. So the more muscles that we start to flex in the real world and understand what those unanticipated values are, and then create, storytelling, right? This is all about data and stories and being able to share those stories. One of the things that we're really excited about, you talked about 30 or 40 billion RFID-enabled products. Mm-hmm. We know that there's a tipping point as well. And I've heard that it's, maybe around 30% in a manufacturing facility. If you have to segregate and, run 30% of your product run one way and 70% the other way, it actually becomes cheaper and easier to run all of it in the same way. And so we think that building, whether it's in the quick serve restaurant space where we're starting to see a lot of traction, in retail, in protein, all of these areas where you have high value, seafood is a great example. Look, when seafood gets wasted, you don't just grow more, right? It is a resource that is not easily renewable. Mm. So we're really trying to focus on telling stories in areas that really matter. And then to your point, migrating that throughout the supply chain, because knowing where one thing is or two things is, doesn't matter. I always say, if I'm ready to leave the house and I have my phone, but I don't have my keys, I'm not going anywhere. I need everything to be together and organized to be able to make that trip. So that's kind of the way that we think about it. And we need partners, we need storytellers, and we need data to really validate that all these things are true.
Again, agree. And I think stories that resonate at the most senior levels in organizations, if I look at our biggest projects, then there's visibility from the CEO, the COO, the EVP is the owner of a visibility platform. And that's what it takes until it just becomes a thing that everyone does. And then we see the whole thing really exploding. We've run out of time, I'm afraid. I have another 2 hours of stuff that I want to talk with you about. So maybe you should come back again and we can talk about all the other technologies that you've had sight of and the lessons that you've learned. But John, we have another part of this conversation we're going to move on to, which is your career and how you get to the catbird seat in this amazing company and a little bit on the music front that we always talk about. But thanks for talking to us on this part of the conversation.
Steve, this has been absolutely delightful. Look forward to doing it again.
So John, I think you've got an amazing job in an amazing company. How did your career lead you up to getting this role? If someone else wanted your job, assuming at some point you'll hang up your spurs, what's the prescription for doing what you do?
It's a great question. Rarely in a career do you feel like every job that you had previous to your current role directly connected somehow to what it is that you're doing. And I've been very fortunate in that regard. I've been in packaging my whole career in one way, shape, or form. And I started out early on working for a printer that was in what they defined as promotions. So utilizing serialized codes to identify winners amongst a group of packaging. So think of, giveaways on packaged food, things like that. I work very closely in the beverage industry, working on Super Bowl-type promotions. And so we got very involved into uniquely identifying subsets within a much larger group of products that had value. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of step one.
But, and just to be clear, the winners are the winners of people in a contest or winners in the A-B testing sense of the word?
So actually just random winners. Buy a 24-pack of a beverage and there's a special code inside or there's some type of a ticket or a redemption piece.
Okay.
We would insert serialized winners into the general population, and that's how you would find out. Think McDonald's Monopoly, games like that.
Yeah.
So really kind of a game of chance. And that was how I started my career, working in this really interesting space, working with agencies, retired FBI agents that would come to our facility and oversee kind of the things that we were doing. And it helped me understand that packaging can have more value over and above just carrying product and displaying brand information. And I would say that was kind of the germination of this idea in my mind that if you can make every package unique, something interesting could be a result of that. I took the next step then was I started working in the space of transaction cards. So think gift cards, Visa, MasterCard, any of the branded American Express, mm-hmm. Discover. That was even taking it to another level. Now, every unique ID related to every other. So now not just having unique identifiers in a small subset, but everyone was unique and they all related to each other. So think of these familial parent-child relationships. You actually created a data plan that you produced everything to. So you started off with a million records and each pallet had 100,000. Each mm-hmm. case had 1,000, each tray had 100, there were 10 packs of 10 in each 100. We would build the data plan first and then manufacture to the data plan. And that got me really thinking about, wow, data is powerful, and organizing data in a way that links together branded materials, creative relationships, almost like the idea of Russian nesting dolls, where you large amount of data that is subsets, smaller and smaller and smaller, down to eaches, and then knowing where each is in its journey and potentially in relationship to others. So,
and these cards again, what were they? The gift cards or
a gift card? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And because they're so valuable, you need to be really sure where they are in that packaging hierarchy because you're sending. They're presumably distributed and then broken up and
exactly
and,
right.
And these things are worth a lot. So, okay.
They can be worth a lot, and there's a lot of fraud in that space. So, okay. So the authentication process, we work closely in multi-factor authentication. So I think of that as phase two of my career was taking unique data and now applying it with purpose where everything has a unique identification. And that was, kind of my career, two-thirds of my career prior to joining WestRock.
Amazing. And then what brought you to WestRock?
So I came to WestRock actually as part of an acquisition. I went to work for another company that was acquired by WestRock. I knew that was happening. And it was interesting to me to understand how a company of WestRock size and scale could take this kind of unique identification and scale it throughout an enterprise. Today WestRock makes 60 million corrugated cases a day. We make tens of billions of things globally that are in consumers' hands and travel through supply chains and protect goods and then are recycled. And so the notion of a circular economy is really interesting to me. The ability to use utilize recycling in a measurable way as ESG goals and extended producer responsibility become more impactful to both CPGs and retailers. And I felt like there was really a role I could play within this organization to help make, to lift and shift some of the things that I learned from packaging and transaction cards and sweepstakes and gaming and things like that, and finding a way to make every package that WestRock makes unique in a way, in a very large scalable enterprise. It was just a fascinating challenge for me.
It is. So that's kind of one dimension of this career journey. But then there's, you know, the other dimension, which is your VP of an important group. How do you get to be a VP? Is there like signature achievements or mentors or what's the, if someone is watching this who's starting their career and they're like, I want to get to the top, what's the prescription?
Yeah, I don't know that my path is prescriptive, but all of those things, Steve. I had some phenomenal mentors. I think the thing I would say to young people, and I say this to my kids as they're entering the work world, is that you need to have a healthy respect and for your employer. You have to stand up for yourself, and I think that there's a certain element of fearlessness, right? I mean, It is, sometimes I think my job is fighting every day, right? I mean, making sure we have 300 locations globally, and we grew through acquisition. So we have all these different bits and pieces that are pulled together into an enterprise. And now under leadership of our current CEO, the initiative that we have, Path to One. And I would say if you need to fight for what you really believe in, certainly not in an antagonistic way, but I think if you want to achieve a level within an organization similar to what I've done, it requires, self-confidence. You need to be a great communicator. You need to be inclusive and willing to work as part of a team. I think those are all really important attributes. And at the end of the day, really look out for yourself. And when you see opportunities, seize those with both hands. I think the biggest thing that holds people back is fear. We actually had a big sales meeting in December, and we had a guest speaker who said something that was really impactful to me. And he talked about FOMO, fear of missing out, and FOMU, which is he identified as fear of messing up. And so many people are afraid that they're going to be exposed when they make mistakes. And you are, but what happens, what you do when you make a mistake is what really, I think, identifies your potential and your leadership and really just, how you're able to respond to that, I think, is really important. So I think you identified all the things that can get you to a role, into a leadership style role, but you have to keep, reinventing that to make sure that you continue to add value in whatever role you're in an organization.
Well, that's true, because as you rise to the top, then there's kind of the Darwinian pressures are greater. You got there because you're willing to take risks, but those risks are real. There's like there's a lot of it's a revolving door. It can be. I mean, obviously, some executives. You've had a long career at WestRock, but it's not easy. It's not like, oh, you get the keys to the castle and then that's it.
Well, no, and you look, if you have self-awareness as an individual, you're kind of always fighting imposter syndrome. Did I really earn this role? Do I earn it every day? And I think a certain element of that is healthy, right? Yeah. I mean, I think every day you need to think about what you're contributing. Are you still pushing as hard as you can and contributing as much as you can? And those are things that always strike me. I mean, I wake up in the morning ready for the day, but I always think about, what can I do to make myself better and my team better? And I just think it's an important attribute for anyone in business.
Very good. Well, come to the part of the show where the music choices get asked about. You haven't had long, but have you had a chance to come up with three songs that have meaning to you?
Yeah, I have. So the first one I would say is I Would Walk 500 Miles by the Proclaimers.
Oh, classic. It's
a song my wife and I absolutely love. It gets us up and moving, and whenever we hear it, it's really energizing. Just love it. I love that the Proclaimers are twins, which I think is fascinating, and the way that they perform together. So I would say that would be my first one.
And it's a simple song, isn't it? And it's not like this super high produced. It's basically about very gutsy, something very Scottish about the way they sing it as well. Not just the accent, but the grit,
I think it's very gritty. It's very real. And I think, my wife and I have been married for nearly 30 years. And I think that notion of I would walk 500 miles really resonates with us. It's it's about a journey and the willingness to do things for each other, which I think is kind of cool about that song.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And what's next?
So this is a family song, and I don't know where this came from, but Take On Me by A-ha. Was a big video song, and there was a summer I remember we were traveling a lot in the car with all four of our sons, and we get to the point where we were all screaming at the top of our lungs, singing this song, and it was something that if you were disengaged, the brothers would make sure that, everybody was involved in it. And so that's a song that is very much kind of ingrained in our family. And it's fun, it's high energy, and something that, kind of forced us all to be engaged.
Oh, I love it. No sitting at the back in playing your Nintendo, whatever it was that's going on.
No, we actually have a great video of my one son literally playing a Game Boy and his brother elbowing him to make sure that he participates in the song. So it's one that has a lot of meaning for our family. It's just fun.
That's great. It's like one of those early MTV videos that captured people's imagination.
Yeah, I think the visual piece of it was appealing, along as the music, very easy to sing along and participate in.
Very good. And your last choice?
So my last choice is more of a classic, Fly Me to the Moon by Frank Sinatra. And this is one, so when our first son to get married got married, he is a pianist. And so he started off their first dance playing the piano to Fly Me to the Moon. And then it morphed into, the DJ playing that version of it. And that was the first dance he had with his wife, and it was so moving. And that's a song that always, every time I hear it, I have great memories associated with it, and that was really a kind of a cool, moving experience.
I feel quite moved just hearing about it. That is awesome. I would love to have seen that segue. That's very cool.
Yeah, we didn't know he was going to do it, and when he sat down at the piano and started to play, and it just morphed into their first dance. It was really, really incredible and something that my family treasures.
Very good. Well, John, thanks for spending time with us on the podcast. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, and thank you too. This has been super.
So that was my conversation with John. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you did, then please don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to tell your friends, and I look forward to seeing you next time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.